Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show. It's brought to you by Levi Solicitors. They will do you 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. No Michael Normanton today. He's gone off again. More time off. Outrageous. Instead, we really like him a lot more than Michael. It's Rob Conlon.
Hello there.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello. Yeah, Rob actually turns up, whereas Michael, I think he's had a tough 3 days since his last holiday, so it was time to get away again.
So this is Propaganda, the show where we find out what has been said about Leeds, both by our fans and by their fans. We'll hear from the Everton fans in just a bit. First of all, let's dive into the feedback that we received from our TSB Plus subscribers and what have they been talking about and what did we get right about the game on the match ball at the weekend?
The penalty was obviously a big talking point, and I think Liam Cooper in the spotlight, Ryan Oddy did ask, how does Cooper keep getting work?
Well, he's got a contract, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's in fairly steady employment. But then there were a few people, Chris did suggest that the penalty is debatable. Could be my heart talking, he says, but Calvert-Lewin clearly leans into Cooper. And then there's quite a lot more until he asks, am I a lunatic? And I think it's very difficult to really defend that.
Rob, tell us, was it a penalty?
It looked like it, didn't it? In the ground, it looked like it. It was just waiting for it to go to VAR. And then when the confirmation came, it wasn't that much of a surprise. I do feel sorry for Cooper because I went to the toilet just after they'd scored and everyone was just slagging him off in there. And then back in the ground, everyone was just slagging him off in there. It feels like he's with Helder Costa and Tyler Roberts in never been just a mistake away from being absolutely pilloried, which feels a bit harsh.
I mentioned on the match ball that I felt like there were moments when the entire season and our future as a club hung in the balance in that one game where if that had gone against us that game, it would have brought the whole thing crashing down. And I think Cooper was probably a symptom of that by getting caught the wrong side. I thought, well, he's finished now. Bielsa will play him every single week, but he can't keep up with the Premier League anymore. Therefore, we're going to go down.
It's less about this particular incident. Cooper does have that because of what he did in the Championship in his early years. People assume he's never far away from that. And so this is always a reminder of him just booting Cardiff players in the chest for no reason. But it's very rare that you do get a Cooper mistake now, and he has proven himself as good as most of the defenders in the Premier League. I think there are a lot of defenders worse. One, obviously, we saw Gary Cahill gave up halfway through last season.
On his career.
Exactly. So Cooper's fine in the Premier League. The fear of this is less about this penalty, this incident. It's that Lukaku is now in this league again, and that's going to be a problem. I don't know when we play Chelsea. I'm not looking forward to that match.
He says it's sometime around December.
Yeah, it's definitely this season, isn't it? Twice.
Mm. But those are only going to be difficult. The bonus is that it is only twice.
Get him in a cup as well. They'll rest Lukaku in the cup. But there is that difference where I think Liam Cooper is a very good defender in the Premier League. I think we've got four very good defenders in the Premier League, but then I'm watching clubs like Chelsea spending 110 million on Lukaku. If somebody signs Haaland this season or next season, if Harry Kane gets a move to Manchester City and he's got actually good players giving him the ball and stuff, suddenly all these teams seem to be concentrating on spending as much money as they can on the best strikes that they can afford. And I think that's unfair. When we still have defenders that we brought with us from the Championship, another one from Ajax Academy, and then we've got a couple of internationals, but not until we can buy a £100 million defender.
Which I don't even want us to do.
Well,
But this is the thing. Like,
I don't think they should be allowed to have a £100 million striker until we've got a £100 million defender. Otherwise, it's just not fair.
One of those dreadful modern phrases is there are levels to this game. And unfortunately, that's a stark reminder of it. There's no way we can, well, I don't think we can even be chucking 30 million round on a player, to be perfectly honest, given what we've heard from like Angus Kinnear in recent times. And we know that they've gone for a more low-key transfer window this time. Let's just hope it's fine. I think it's going to be fine. Although there were anxieties attached to the defence in general. Jacob, somebody called Not DePaul, Ryan and Lee all picked up shortcomings in the defence.
Not DePaul, I've had to trim his name down. He refers to himself as Paul, not the midfielder we should have signed.
Right.
I've got him down to Not DePaul. A lot of this was about our confusion on the match ball about why Luke Ayling wasn't marking Demari Gray. And it's been rightly pointed out by Jacob and also by Ryan H that it wasn't his man.
Ah.
So that would explain it.
That and would I did, explain it a lot.
When I watched the I watched the game the next day on a television, and I could see then more clearly.
You and your televisions, one in the ground.
This is a big telly.
Yeah, was it your own at home?
It was my own.
I still imagine you've got a cathode ray tube at home though. I know you talk like an LCD flat panel thing.
Which World Cup was it that I got an LCD flat panel at last? I think it might have been. Was there a World Cup in 2008?
No, there was Euros.
It might have been for the Euros that I finally got rid of. I had one of those VCR combis that Ken Bates used to roll with. I kept one of those for donkey's years. Anyway, that's not relevant. But now, yeah, I've got all the screens I need to tell me that, it was Dallas was should
fair,
have been tracking.
Fair point. What do you reckon, Rob, to Demari Gray? Because I thought he was all right. I saw that transfer and I thought, that's a bit of a weird one this summer. And it was quite low value, wasn't it? It was like £1.5 million, 1.7 or something from Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, he was annoyingly good. And if we wanted a winger, I'm a bit like, there was one there for £1.5 million that maybe we could have had. He's had a weird career though, because he was so hyped up at a young age and then never really did anything, disappeared to Germany, and now he's coming back playing really well at Elland Road, which is annoying.
There were positives to the game. We'll get to those in due course.
I was just going
to
say on the defence and the marking thing, when I did watch it back, it was noticeable that with our man marking, the movement of their forward players, one of the reasons, it wasn't just that Ayling wasn't marking Gray, it was that Ayling was nowhere to be seen when that was happening, when Gray is running around Dallas in the build-up to their what led to the penalty. And it's because Ayling is on Richarlison and he's just run off deep to get Ayling out of the way. So he's followed him.
Sneaky bastard.
And then when he's trying to come back, you can see there's a bit of confusion where people aren't sure if they should be handing a player over or if they're staying with their man or that. And it's Calvert-Lewin, big target man. And then you've got Gray, Richarlison and Iwobi just running around in all sorts of different directions. And it was quite difficult to deal with.
They should stop doing that because it distracts our defenders from doing their job properly. And I'm not a fan. Rafinha, you're not a fan of anything. I don't think he was picked out. The Strop, you mentioned his Strop Moscow. He's never happy, is he, really? I've seen him smile twice so far.
And it is strange to be so unhappy about not being allowed to shoot from 45 yards. It's the kind of thing you'd want a friend to stop you from making that mistake. And that's how I felt Stuart Dallas was approaching him. And you can only just see the very end of it on the television footage when Dallas is looking behind him at somebody out of shot, saying, I'm not going to let you shoot. And also, why don't you go up front where you should be? But instead, Rafinha just said, well, if I'm not allowed to shoot, I'm going to defend. How do you like that?
Power and accuracy is what Nathan picked out from Rafinha. Rob, do you like Rafinha?
I love him. It was nice to see him in the flesh as well. There were a couple of times he skinned fullbacks, which was nice to see in person. I remember seeing the free kick that Moscow's referencing. And yeah, I did see him stood over it. I thought, yeah, he probably would shoot if we let him here. Because that's just what he wants to do. He just kept shooting all game and he finally got one with a beauty. Being in the ground, I had the same reaction of Michael, of being like, oh, is this going to VAR? So I didn't give it the whole celebration, which was a bit disappointing because it was the moment we were all waiting for.
See, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, we were right in line with it. I think it was because the cross came back in. It was a second cross. And I think because
Calvin stepped back, didn't he?
Yeah, because their defence was moving up, it was a bit like, are we going to get caught out? But judging by the reaction of the players, then it was like, I think we're going to be okay.
You can thank Tom Cole. Has spotted how it wasn't offside is because Yerry Mina was spooning Tyler Roberts, as Tom puts it. And when you watch the replays, Mina already cuddled Bamford in the first half and Yerry just puts his arms around him and kind of holds him, but Mina's goal side. So the sensible thing to do if you're trying to get a player offside, you hold him like that and do a kind of a ballroom
a cuddling pirouette, yes.
Yeah, you want to shift him around that way or spin him. But he doesn't do that. He just holds him and then the ball goes in and he just keeps holding him. And after a while, Tyler Roberts says, Tom is speculating that perhaps he says, I'm not Pat Bamford. You don't have to hold on to me this long. But that's one of the ways that our goal was allowed to stand, kissing and cuddling from the Everton defenders.
In terms of the bench, Sazzy was asking why Rodrigo wasn't brought on. I think we know that he's been carrying an injury, another injury. So that's simply the reason he didn't come on, and he's rehabilitating again. Starting to worry about him now, aren't you?
It's just not happening for him, is it? No. It was
you wonder if it ever will.
To see him getting dragged off after 45 minutes at Old Trafford was a bit of a stark warning. I think it was a shame he wasn't fully fit at the weekend, because that was like the change that seemed to make sense. When we'd used two, there was a third one to use, which we didn't end up using. And, you know, there were options out wide, but you're looking at Rafinha going, well, he just seems like he's going to desperate to score. Harrison was playing well on the left. So you think, well, don't really want to change out there.
Stick some fresh legs on up
front.
Yeah,
it'd be nice to see Rodrigo. But yeah, it was strange that he was even on the bench, I think, if he wasn't able to play.
This is the joy of a threadbare squad, isn't it? we had Ding, Jack and Ryan and Lee all contributing various bits on Tyler Roberts. A variety of opinions, I think it's fair to say. Like Ding was saying, he understands you wanting to avoid the pylon with Roberts, but your defence of him is going too far.
Yeah, this was under a list from Ding, headlined Criticisms of Moscow, which we'll
I
come
mean,
on
honestly,
to.
Honestly, Ding, if you want to send those to me and Michael at thesquareball.net, then we'll just file them away with all the other ones.
Yeah, my annual review can bring them all up. But yeah, my defence of Tyler Roberts is going too far. He was good when we came on.
As Michael said when he actually bothered to turn up for work, I thought Tyler Roberts made the difference with Jamie Shackleton, added some fresh legs, but there were individual moments of frustration there as well when he just let a ball, you know, spill away from his feet, or he'd kill it dead, and then the pass just went a little bit short or behind, Bamford being the perfect example.
But not to pit him and Bamford against each other, but they do have and one of them has just got a 5-year lucrative contract. The number of times Bamford's first touch is probably on par with Tyler Roberts' last touch. I feel those are the two frustrations. If you could maybe put them two together, it would be perfect, because there was at least two times we were attacking and Bamford is trying to give it like a feather number 10 touch into the path of probably Matias Cliq or maybe Rafinha's coming through, and he just fucks it up. Like, he doesn't kick the ball hard enough and it goes. And then there was a big chance at the, not quite the back post, but he had the left-hand side of the penalty area pretty much all to himself, and the ball came to him and his first touch basically kills the chance. He then has a shot from a too narrow angle. And I feel like, you know, if he can do that for 90 minutes, Tyler Roberts can come on in 20 and do some good things and do some. I mean, Bamford also, like, for all that criticism of that first touch, the assist for Click's goal is brilliant. And that's what you want from him all the time. But it's kind of the same of Tyler Roberts does good things and that's what you want from him all the time. But I feel that there's a willingness to focus on the negativity with Tyler Roberts. Whereas if we're not going to be the same about, you know, I'm trying to be positive about Tyler Roberts and the good things he does. but if nobody's interested in that, I'm just going to bring out all the negatives about all our other players, starting with our best ones.
Ryan did pick this one out. He said he found it very bold of you to celebrate Bamford's new contract by blaming all of Tyro's mistakes on him.
Well, it's true. I mean, I described them and I watched them again. There's the pass that he plays to Bamford is just behind him and it's not good enough. But then a minute later, Bamford is trying to play Harrison down the left wing and it's miles away from Harrison and it doesn't work. So it's not like Tyler Roberts is alone, that he comes onto the pitch and starts fucking everything up. Every footballer at every level makes mistakes. It happens. I think when Roberts came on Saturday, he played very well. It was a good half hour. It's more like what you want for him. He can get better. Shackleton was good as well.
Not mentioned by anybody on the feedback.
No, I think there was a couple of like passing references, but he's not being spoken about as kind of a big positive from the game. But when he's a little bit like Roberts, where you are looking at him this season to be like, come on, good. And I think that is fair about Roberts when people are, you know, come on, you've got the contract, justify it. Shackleton, you're looking for like, you're 22, you've got to
now
make some
time.
Progress.
Yeah.
But there was nothing wrong with either of them on Saturday. And it's probably, you know, we got really good after they both came on.
Where does Shaq fit, Rob?
I really like him and I really want him. I really want to see him play more. I think it just seems a shame that he never seems to play in central midfield, which is where he wants to play. And he's always coming on at wing back. Is he only going to play wing back rather than at full back if we play back four? But he always seems to make an impact. He's just so quick. He's so direct. Yeah, I think everyone's talking about signing a new midfielder. Can we just see Shackleton play there for a bit?
I think that's the more likely outcome.
But it seems like, you know, Bielsa did it last season with Roberts, where he just gave him 12 games. And, you know, there were injuries, there were suspensions, but it was his, he challenged him, didn't he, of saying, look, you need to prove you're a first team player. And it feels like Shackleton needs that because he's too good to go out on loan. I think going back to Roberts, I think kind of the problem for him is that what he has to try and do is really difficult. Like those passes he's trying to play to put Bamford in on goal, they're really difficult passes to make and they didn't quite come off. I think maybe his decision making in terms of when to take that risk could be better. That dribble he went down the left wing and ended up winning the corner. When he went on that dribble, I was a bit like, why are you going there? Because there's like three Everton defenders and just him. But he made a good thing of it. But you think, well, maybe he could be a bit more calculated there and people would be a bit more forgiving when he does give the ball away.
You did a step over though. I like step over. They're dead good.
Not much mention, yeah, of Shackleton in the feedback form from the TSB Plus subscribers. And not much mention actually of Everton being whiny little bitches.
Oh, well, I mean, we do villains in the other
That's true.
Podcast, so just wait. There is plenty of...
That's excellent forward selling.
Plenty of villains. This is more like the positive part. Everybody is in a reasonable good mood, apart from how they feel about me. Chris R. made a good point after last week and after going behind twice. Resilience was good to have not lost that match. When you were saying before, it felt like our season was kind of at stake if something goes wrong. Two matches, you know.
And yeah.
I think we've got some Arsenal fans to hear from soon.
Yeah, and the Everton fans as well, actually. At games turn on moments, we saw that we crumbled when we went behind at Old Trafford, whereas actually they had chances to put this one to bed at Everton, I think, at 2-1. And you'll hear from the Everton fans who will, you know, spoiler alert, will say essentially the same thing, that they should have put it to bed at that point, but they're quite happy with the point. But yeah, that they could have done. They didn't know, and we stepped back up, and it was good because we didn't lose.
And it was good because we were back,
yeah,
as well. Aiden, don't think we can understate just how great it feels to be back in the ground. Nice to see. Nothing has changed in the ground. Toilets stink, can't get served, but we wouldn't have it any other way. I thought everybody would be able to get served. That was the prediction. There will be touch screens, robots.
Yeah, you just put your order into Skynet and it delivers beer to you. That's how it works.
Obviously,
isn't it?
I didn't get to see any of that because I was watching my little telly in the...
Oh, yeah. And there's the telly bell. By the way, if you did miss the match ball, Moscow has been moved off the gantry. This is the old gantry gong that we used to ring whenever he dropped the G-bomb. Not there anymore, are you? Back row of the West Stand.
Back row of the West Stand.
But what have you got? A new toy? You've got a new toy, haven't you?
Got a little telly little to watch.
So this is the little telly bell, I think, for now. Little telly belly. There we go.
I do apologise. Somebody did point out they've had to move from their seat so that I can be there. But I would say the seat is gone.
Different. That's different to what you said off air when you were cackling about it and said, I'm glad that they've lost their seat because I am better. That's what I think those were your exact words.
You've not just lost the seat. The seat is gone. There's now a bench. So all those, I have not taken anybody's seat. The seat was thrown out.
Is it a bench like you used to sit on at school for your photographs?
Yes. No. No, it's nothing like that. Rob, you experienced the actual... Did you try and buy a pint? Did you buy a pint? Did
yes.
you drink and eat? Was it great?
I got a pint beforehand. It was very exciting to go through the turnstiles and the first thing you saw was this new gadget on the wall to pre-order your pint. And then
Talk us through it because I've got no idea of this.
It's just like being in McDonald's, basically.
Right.
You touch screen, order me John Smith's, go to the collection point and there's like a three separate queues of disgruntled men moaning that all the pumps have already stopped working at 2:15.
So you get your pint of John Smith's?
Yes, just about. It tasted like a beer in Ellen Road tastes.
Which is just, if you could describe it in three words or fewer.
Flat, lukewarm.
Piss?
I won't go that. I mean, I drank it, so I won't go that far. But it did the job, I guess.
Some nasty boys at school once tricked me into drinking piss out of a can of Coke. They offered me a drink, and it wasn't Coke, it was piss. I just thought I'd share that with you.
Would you like?
Cheers. So anyway, yeah, I'm distracting from your pint tale. But you drank it, and how was it? If you could score it out of 10?
Probably a 6. I'd already had a few, so that helps. That eases things as well. I wasn't brave enough to try pre-ordering one for halftime because that sounded like carnage.
Yeah.
From what I can gather from the reports, the way it seems to be working is that you tap into the machine what you want and you pay. And then you go over, you queue. And when you get to the front of the queue, you tell somebody what it is you want yeah. and then they pour it for you. So there's actually not really a great saving because you still have to go somewhere and tell somebody that I would like this. I would like a pint of John Smith, please, even though you've already told a machine and given it money.
And you have to wait while they pour it when you could be paying anyway. So yeah, great system. Good. It's good to be in the Premier League.
Just a few wrinkles. I'm sure they can iron it out. Mind you, I don't know if you saw the footage that's been doing the rounds on Twitter of the behind the scenes thing at Spurs. I think it was at the Spurs stadium where it looks amazing. But also equally fucking dreadful.
Yeah, I don't want that.
No,
I,
but we're going to have it.
It looks
like a posh Dubai nightclub.
I wrote last season, midway through lockdown, about missing kind of Elland Road for all its crap parts, for want of a better word. And yeah, missing that feeling of frustration and angst and excitement, because it is all part of it. And yeah, I want the toilets to be crap. I want it to take ages to get a pint. That's all part of the Elland Road experience.
They need to, when they build the new thing, the new Elland Road Megaplex Megadome, put a bit of asbestos in there just for old time's sake so we can remember what it was like with the threat of the roof collapsing. Yeah,
the spot of lead paint never did anybody any harm.
Baps McGinty, fantastic name, enjoyed the rocking atmosphere and the frigging noise when we scored. It was lovely, wasn't it? It was proper, it was real, it was visceral.
And Lee was happy with the penalty heroes, the guy trying to put Calvert-Lewin off with his belly and also the woman giving him the finger for when he was celebrating. Ding. Unfortunately,
going down the list.
Yeah, this was top of his list of criticisms of me. I'm a flag hypocrite. Unfortunately, there's a huge contradiction / hypocrisy about enjoying the needle and confrontation, but then saying it's not cool to be criticising the shitty flags. If you enjoy the aggro, then you should want to burn the flags.
I've got mixed feelings about the flags. I know what he's getting at.
Yeah,
and that it's right that he should attack you for it, but. The flags are a bit new fan, nicey-nicey, but it was an occasion that did demand a spectacle. There's a difference between having a flag and waving a flag and making it look cool and putting it down and getting on with the game and having clappers, you know, those awful clappers that they've had like Huddersfield and Leicester and stuff. That's a different kettle of fish, but I don't know.
I might have said on the match ball that it's not cool to be criticising the shitty flags. That's not necessarily... I think that's because I got to the point of saying when you look at the spectacle it creates... It seems pretty hard to hate it. It's like looking at a flower and finding it disgusting. Beautiful thing.
And in the past, we've all got our scarves out and held them over our heads and pulled them tight, and that creates a visual spectacle.
It's the fakeness of it, and I get that, but I also, sometimes I feel like you can like both, and that's the thing, because there was a perfect response on Twitter that I saw to Rob's article about being back in Elland Road and some of Lee Brown's great photos of the flags and things. A guy who said, I thought the flags were completely tin pot, but I was still waving it around like an idiot before the match started. And I think that's where they kind of work. Some people will be full on flag wanker. It's the best thing they've ever seen. Can't wait to get in there and wave them about. A lot of those people will be children, so it's a bit harsh to call them wankers. But some adults will also enjoy it as well. And it's hard, you know, if people like waving a flag, that's fine. Other people will be pissed. And if you put a flag in front of them, they're going to wave it anyway. Other people will hate it, as Ding says, and been trying to resist the urge to burn them. But that's the point about a football stadium. There were 36,000 people there on Saturday. That's twice the population of the towns I grew up in. And if you think about a town, there's an area that's got some posh houses, some not so posh houses. There's a bit by the industrial estate. There's different schools.
The mad bastard who roams around in tracksuit bottoms.
They all have different atmospheres and different people, and they all want different things. And if if everybody in that town all went to the same pub, it would be carnage because nobody wants the same stuff when you've got that many different people. And a football stadium is where you can accommodate it. Some people can wave the flag that they're given, and then the person next to them can hate it. But because you both support Leeds, you kind of have this uneasy or easy truce while it goes on. And I think the net result, it made as many people happy as it made. Well, there's only Ding really seems to be so upset about it. He wants to take it to the extent of fire. But I think that might have been amplified by listening to me talk about it. I'm not sure whether the true anger is whether I'm the target or Nylon is the target. But, you know,
Both of you are flammable, so...
We can do all of these things. There can be... just because some people in the stadium are waving flags doesn't mean there cannot also be aggro. And I think that's really come through from the weekend's response to Elland Road. Every report, every fan site's talking about the hostile, vicious atmosphere that really came through at Elland Road. And it was not affected by the fact that some people were waving flags before the match started. There has not been a ban on aggro just because there were some flags as well. So be as aggressive as you want, Ding, just maybe not with me, because I'm a gentle, loving soul who just wants to look at flags and flowers. And you know what else I think? Let's get a drum. I don't think we should get a drum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
In the second half of Propaganda, we find out what the opposition fans had to say about Leeds United. And let's be fair, on this show, we often dig out Scousers for their swivel-eyed lunacy. But I think based on the evidence we've accumulated of Everton in the Premier League, it's just Liverpool, isn't it? The mad ones are attached to Liverpool because these Everton fans, they're all really balanced and fair and are sort of generally talking about Everton more than going, Leeds are shithouses, what they're talking about. They're all fairly sensible lads.
Quite annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't want to like any opposition fans, but they all seem like decent lads. The general consensus being they had chances to win it and probably should have done, but ultimately were happy with a point, which is what I mentioned in the first half of the show. So we'll dive into Toffee TV first of all, and this is their equivalent of the match ball sort of post-match reaction. And they thought they should have won, but I think by the end of this clip, he's almost starting to talk himself out of it a little bit.
It was a good game. It was a good game. The referee let it flow for the most part. A lot of good old physical challenges on both sides. It's an enjoyable game. And it's just daft goals that we've conceded. And I'm certainly disappointed that we didn't win it. That's good in a way. You know, I think if anyone was going to win it, you know, we had the chances. They only had a couple of chances, really. They had a few that went wide and stuff. But really, Pickford hasn't had to make too many saves with their goalkeeper. I think we had 8 attempts. You know, we've had a lot of blocks. I get that. And listen, there'll be Leeds fans sitting there going, we should have won that. They had the possession. We had 29% possession. You know, that's just daft, isn't it?
The accent is still quite harsh when you're not really prepared for it, isn't it? It really does. Wild. At least there's nothing about being a special club. Although, when you were giving the intro about how reasonable these people are, I did start thinking about the people who were painting death threats on bed sheets and putting them up outside what turned out not to be Rafa Benitez's house. That didn't seem particularly like normal behaviour. But yeah, his opinions seemed sound.
There's a moment in one of these clips, I can't remember which one it is, but it ends on the word back and you get a lot of scouts in it. Bah! But we will get to that. Well, they thought that the game did turn on Dominic Calvert-Lewin's miss and other stuff that flowed from it.
That little moment with the goalkeeper, you're just hitting it straight at the goalkeeper. You've got to dink the goalkeeper. You've got to. That's what top finishers do. You know, I love Dom to bits, but it's a flaw in his makeup that he has to become more clinical in front of goal. Listen, he's a great centre forward, and all these people who say what he isn't, I think he's I love him to bits, but he's got to be chipping the goalkeeper there to make it 3-1, and he doesn't. And Leeds make a couple of subs, so they freshen it up. And that, to me, that's where I looked at it. I think we needed a sub 5 minutes before they scored their second goal. I think that's when we needed a sub, because when we made our subs, we got complete control of that game. But they got their goal itself, you know, ball into the box. You shouldn't be able to take a ball down in the box like that. You just shouldn't. It shouldn't be happening. But we allow him to take the ball down in the box. He lays it back. And let's be honest, it's a cracking finish by the lad. Rafinha's wrapped his foot right round it. There's nothing Jordan Pickford can do about that. But it's those little mistakes. It's the little mistakes that are costing us at the back.
There it is. At the back.
I noticed that even when they were singing Damari Gray's name, you could get the Scouse twang from the away end, which was quite impressive.
It is quite strong. I'm distracted. Maybe I'm not very interested in what Everton fans have to say. I'm looking at a list of their celebrity fans, because obviously with Liverpool being so dominant in the city, as you wonder who's left, and it's kind of, it says a lot that one person on the list is Pete Best, the fifth Beatle, the drummer that they sacked before they got famous so they could get Ringo Starr. Where, Dan might know more about this, where in the hierarchy of girls allowed does Nicola Roberts stand? Is she near the top?
She was always the really good singer, I think it was Nicola, okay. She's the redhead.
So she's a pretty good one. They've got Sonia, another redhead, and Claire Sweeney off of Brookside. Also, Hayley Williams from Paramore, which is a surprising one. I don't know if that advances our understanding of the game at all.
Have they not got Rocky as well? And still Sylvester Stallone in?
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone is right up the top. They have a section of people who they think deserve pictures on this website, like Dame Judi Dench, Sylvester Stallone photographed with an Everton scarf. And Sir Paul McCartney, so I suppose he balances out Pete Best a bit. But
sometimes Snoop Dogg must have worn their shirt.
I mean, he's worn everybody's shirt, hasn't he?
I mean, everyone's had a go with Snoop, but he's probably on the list somewhere. Right, let's move on to Blue Room.
Sorry for completely dismissing that Everton fans' opinion, but it all sounded fine. Yeah, Calvert-Lewin, shit, I agree.
They had this to say about the penalty on Blue Room.
I can't believe the amount of fuss there was over what I think was one of the most blatant penalties you could ever wish to see.
Is there not a case to say it was a red card as well?
But I saw Mike put that on Twitter, didn't he? And I think it was Neil Abraham, obviously, I think we all follow on Twitter as well, saying about the rules say if it's, you know, denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity where the defender's not gone to play the ball, then it should be a red card. And, you know, he's clearly not trying to play the ball there, is he? You know, he's got two hands on Dom and just dragged him back because he's ahead of him. So essentially got a bit of a red card, yeah. But I just couldn't believe all the faffing over it. And, like, I was staggered he didn't give it on the field, like, initially as the first decision. Yeah. And then all the cry-offs from the Leeds players and, you know, all the fans and stuff. So, I mean, there's some great photos, isn't there, from that have been doing the rounds of Dom, you know, showing his name off and all their fans losing the plot.
Red card?
No, definitely not, because I don't want it to be. Kryas in from Leeds seems a bit rich as well when they've got Richarlison running around.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't a red card. And isn't there, does double jeopardy still, double jeopardy still apply? That thing of if you're giving away a penalty, you don't also get the red card because it's too much as I'm just looking at it here. It used to be a triple punishment, sent off, concede a penalty and a suspension, all just for tugging somebody's shirt would be a very... And was it a goal-scoring chance? Didn't the ball sail over both of their heads anyway? I don't think he actually stopped him from scoring a clear goal. It was just they got into a grappling match and Cooper, as Michael eloquently put it, did a Cooper-ish thing and dragged the other player down. It wasn't like a player running through on goal. That's where a red card comes in or used to come in, is when the player is running through on goal and you hack them down before they can put it into an empty net. It's a very different... I was actually fairly surprised he got a yellow card for it, because I felt like for the level of severity of just tugging somebody's shirt...
Well, shirt pulling is a yellow though, isn't it? It's a mandatory yellow these days. So
don't expect me to know the rules. I'm surprised. I mean, if they can think it should have been a red card, I can think it shouldn't have been a yellow card, and you can't tell me I'm wrong.
You can't tell me nothing. Fine, sister, fine. Although, again, annoyingly reasonable. They were quite impressed with the crowd.
And you look at how vociferous that crowd was at times, Elland Road. It was a pretty daunting fixture for us, I think, being the first side that goes to Elland Road with fans in the last 18 months. Haven't played a Premier League game in front of a crowd yet, with the exception of Man United last week for the opening game. I think with all of that, bundled into one, you do think that's a decent point, because I thought I was impressed with a lot of the lads that they didn't fold in such a cauldron, because that I imagine, obviously I don't think anything that we saw on our screens wouldn't have done the crowd and the atmosphere anywhere justice for how big it would have been for a lot of these lads to overcome.
A cauldron, Rob, a cauldron.
It's nice though, isn't it? I can't tell whether that's a compliment for us or a kind of a reflection on how sanitised the rest of the Premier League is.
Probably, but both.
Yeah, because it seems that a lot of people commented on the crowd, and yeah, it's nice for people to be reminded of what Elland Road is actually like.
I mean, and we've heard Elland Road louder than that, because the game kind of ebbed and flowed. If we'd have got in front in that game, I think it would have been even louder. It would have been cranked up even more so. And there was the emotion of the day as well, and just the novelty aspect of being back in that probably distracted a little bit.
Everybody had flags in the gobs, didn't they? So they couldn't sing. That was the problem. The flags held it back.
But yeah, it was a good day, wasn't it? And I think it will get better and it will get louder. And I dare say we will upset some people more than we possibly upset Everton.
It is interesting to think that opposition fans are seeing that as something their players have to get over going to Elland Road. It's a little bit like the fitness thing, where all the time since Bielsa's turned up, we've been hearing from other teams saying, oh, well, we're just not as fit as them. We can't stay with them. And you think, well, why don't you just get fitter? And then you might be able to. It's the same thing as, oh, well, you know, the crowd at Elland Road, that's going to be an advantage for them. Well, why don't you do something about your crowd? Get a singing section and a drum and wave some flags about and all the things to generate the atmosphere. Clappers, if you need them. I think they helped Norwich stay in the division, didn't they? And Huddersfield, obviously, they also stayed up because they had the clappers and the drum. I've talked myself out of it. These other clubs are beyond help. Although Everton, be interesting what they're like when they leave Goodison and go to their new blocks.
My fear about the new Elland Road is that.
I don't think Beeston is going to lose its status as a UNESCO World Heritage site.
I just meant the different, like, daft things at Elland Road, though, like extra leg room. So you're a little bit further away from the people around you and it's a bit more of a comfortable experience. And whether you start to find that, you know, you kind of relax into your chair. But I think being hemmed in with no leg room, all the things that make Elland Road uncomfortable and unpleasant, but it makes it what it is. I don't know. Is there anything in it you think about the sort of rough and ready appearance?
I think so, because I hate Wembley because it's really nice. It just feels wrong. It's really comfy seats, loads of leg room, great view wherever you are. And it just feels like, oh, this is a bit, it's more like going to the theatre or something. I don't know. It's weird.
It's interesting, though, that Goodison Park is not a new stadium, but the Everton fans clearly think that Elland Road has got some kind of edge that Goodison Park does not. So whether it's the people, and certainly we seem to be dealing with the more rational side of Liverpool here, as represented by Sonia and Nicola Roberts, or whether it's the Premier League, that being in the Premier League, I mean, Everton have never, when were they even last out? Have they ever been out of Division One? They've been there for far too long. Overdue relegation.
But mind you were on about this, like when we were talking, was it last week when we were on about getting comfortable in the Premier League? Everton as a club, they are the archetypal comfortable Premier League side. They're not going to trouble the top four. They're not going to go down. They're just kind of there, aren't they? Mm. So is it any wonder that it's all just become a bit same old, same old?
So I was so bemused by the reaction to Rafa Benitez. It's like, why do you care that much about who is going to get you to 10th? It's not that big a deal. And they've still got Duncan Ferguson. That was one thing that I kept thinking about with the midst of the atmosphere and the aggro on Saturday, was Duncan Ferguson's presence, as to whether he was going to be part of it. But even
is he going to finally sign for us?
Get him as
a throwback joke there for you 90s Leeds fans.
Get him in as Bielsa's assistant.
Let's move on to Unholy Trinity, because we've got a few of these to get through. This is an Everton podcast featuring three of them, so not dissimilar to what we do. They did also pick out some of the interesting characters in the crowd.
I was saying to the lads early on, you know, it's important that we try and keep them quiet as quickly as possible. And we managed to do, obviously, with the penalty from Calvert-Lewin. And it was fantastically put away, by the way. I thought it was really well finished, and I'm delighted to see Calvert-Lewin on penalties as well. You saw, Dave, you probably saw yourself when Dom was going to take his penalty, there was a fella showing his belly off and rubbing his belly behind the goal. And when Dom scored and he was showing his name and number, Sandy Tosvig rocked up from the Great British Bake Off to give him the middle finger.
I enjoyed Sandy Tosvig, one of the great photos that emerged over the weekend.
I don't think there was any shortage of fingers and gestures. One of the other things that was caught, and I think it's the same guy who was flashing his belly at Calvert-Lewin, was furious with the steward who was standing in front of him and his mate before the penalty was about to be taken. You can see there's a big yelling match going on about getting him to either sit down or get out of the way. I don't know whether it was so he could have a good view of the penalty, or it was Dominic Calvert-Lewin needs to see my stomach. But yeah, they weren't happy about the placement of the match day assistants.
They've got Huddersfield in the Carabao Cup this midweek. So they had on one of the Huddersfield fans for a chat, which added a slightly different dynamic to the show. And there's a couple of little gems in here because they ask him to comment on Elland Road. And he tries really hard to give a considered answer to the question. But I think it's his underlying hatred for Leeds United. It just starts to bubble under the surface.
As a Huddersfield fan, obviously, there's a little bit of rivalry there. What are your thoughts on Leeds being in the Premier League now? And, you know, are they a really, really passionate fan base? What, historically, how have you found it going to Elland Road?
Well, to tell you the truth, I've never been to Elland Road. And I've not...
As a club, sorry.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying about philosophically. Is it a good point or 2 points dropped? I think it's all relative and you have to take into account what Everton's other results are going to be like. Going away and getting a point at Leeds is a great point if you've got a good chance of then taking Leeds to Goodison Park and beating them. But Everton at home last season were just unconvincing at home, weren't they? You know, it wasn't that sort of fortress that you would hope Goodison Park would be. So if you're not getting the home wins at home that you would hope Everton would do, then really going away to a team like Leeds that do throw everything at you, you know, there's an argument to be said that actually if Everton are going to progress and, you know, get into that top six and eventually top four, hopefully, going away to a club like Leeds is somewhere you want to be going and trying to win. Not coming away thinking, oh, that's a good point. You know, that go and beat them.
He's trying to be sensible, but them, a club like Leeds, they don't like us, do they?
Go and beat them, please. Beat them.
I've never been, but I hate going there. Awful place. It's all too sensible and considered, quite frankly, from the Everton part of propaganda. It's getting to the stage now with this show, though, where we get requests. So why not? I don't want to deny you if you want to hear from Arsenal Fans TV when they are in a dreadful state of affairs, then let's get it on.
They're very hard to find, Arsenal Fans TV, aren't they? They don't have much profile.
To be fair, you can't always rely on them for a meltdown these days, which is nice. I think it's a reminder that we're relatively sane and we're doing just fine. So this clip is Yardman, who's one of the guys from Arsenal Fan TV. You know, Robbie's the main guy who sort of leads the show, and Robbie is interviewing Yardman just outside the Emirates. And I don't think Yardman is that fond of Arteta. What do you reckon?
They didn't win, did they?
No.
No, okay.
For the second time, as you're about to hear.
Problem is that he's taking the piss out of us. Some of us anyway, not all of us, some of us. He ain't taking the piss out of me. He's going to come on a press conference. Oh, there's a lot of fans can see the progress. Where is it? Be fair, anybody. You know the problem is, yeah? The 19 Premier League team, the manager, when they see Arsenal, they take 3 points. Honestly, you know that. I'm not even cracking a joke. It's reality. Reality. I went to Brentford. I pay £150. You see me, I didn't have a ticket. I do this every day. I love my club. I turn up away without a ticket. I pay £150 to get in for what? For what? You're going to sit here and tell me, oh, him don't got this, him don't got
that. You've got to take that into consideration.
You have to understand, this is our first game back. Mikel Arteta, look on the top of the board. Yeah? Spending. Arsenal is at the top. So that motherfucker spending the money stupidly.
He's got a point. I mean, I wouldn't have spent my money stupidly by paying £150 for Brentford either.
No, and I mean, I know it's hard getting across London. How can you spend £150 going from one part of London to Brentford? I mean, he's right that I'm looking at Arsenal and seeing 3 points. The sooner we can play them, the better. When do we play them? This season,
twice,
isn't it? Twice.
Yeah.
They are hilarious.
I was annoyed that they beat us last season so comprehensively, or had that spell where they twatted us comprehensively for 4 goals. We didn't deserve it.
No, we'll get better against them this season, but I don't know how bad they're going to get. He was relatively calm compared to the other person that you've picked out, though, which what frightens me about this, I mean, it's something about Yardman was actually quite considered there, where he's like, look, I'm spending a lot of money to go to Brentford and the club is spending a lot of money on rubbish and Arteta is taking the piss if he thinks we've got a good team. When you listen to this next fella, imagine, like, replace Arteta's name with Bielsa's and see how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, this as well, we should say before we get into it, it's a relatively long clip, but it's worth hearing. I think it's very performative, this, and this is the problem with doing video on YouTube, and I'm fully aware that, you know, we've got a YouTube channel right now. However, I don't ever want us to start performing in this same way. But all that said, it does very accurately explain exactly where Arsenal are at the moment. And if this was a piece of art, it would be called Young Man Shouts at His Phone.
Right, Jeff! I'm not happy at all! I'll say to him, get out! Get out! This club is finished! Finished! How long have I been saying for you to leave? You don't know what you're doing! You're a lost soul, mate! 2 games! Conceded 4! 0 points, and who have we got next? Man City! Honestly, I'm sick of it. The performances are terrible! How much have we spent this window? 129 million on a beating. Honestly, the old arsehole used to shop in Harrods, and now I feel like we're shopping in Shoe Zone. I'm sick of it. We spent the most in the Premier League to be bullied. Someone said an anti-bullying campaign for Pablo Mari, because honestly, it got absolutely violated by Lukaku. The tactics are wrong. We got as much identity as John Cena. Exactly. You can't see me because there is none. I've had enough. There's so much dead wood in this club. I could start a bonfire. We got players that want to leave. A guy captain in the side who wanted to leave about 3 weeks ago. It's a disgrace. We're 19th in the Premier League. I don't care if it's after 2 games, honestly. We're in shambles. Arteta's about as much good as a chocolate fireplace when it comes to management. Honestly, do me one favour, Arsenal. Sack Arteta, get Antonio Conte, because I'm sick of it. That Chelsea bench could have walked straight into that first Arsenal team. I've had enough. Arteta, right? Cranky, out. The club's a shambles.
The good news is that history teaches us that when Arsenal change their manager, all the fans calm down and they become very happy about. So when he says, all, you know, Arteta out and Antonio Conte in, I'm sure that if that happens, then his first game, and you go to his channel or AFTV, it'll probably be like watching Bob Ross paint. Just everybody will be calm and happy, and it will all have changed.
Just put a little tree here. A little bitty tree.
But we'll put Ben White in defence, and we'll put Xhaka on a bonfire. So it has got to the point with Arsenal where I don't know how any of them are ever going to be happy ever again. And I also don't know how anybody would go to that football club. Like, I talked about replacing Arteta's name in that with Bielsa, and I think you can get my point there. But also, I feel now, like, imagine you're Ben White. He's only played one game. He missed that one because he's tested positive for COVID. Imagine him, you know, being aware of all of this. People talk about, you know, the way Leeds fans can be online. This is another level. Poor little Ben texting Calvin, just going, I don't know what I'm,
what have I done?
I'm doing. They keep shouting at me. I didn't even play. It's somebody screaming at me in the street through a phone, because I'm sure they'd have to film it if they saw Ben White. And it may be the good part of all this is, if you don't want that to be part of your life, if you're Calvin Phillips and you're looking at what a terrible time Ben White is having at Arsenal, then when that £150 million bid comes in from Arsenal or Liverpool, and you just look at their horrible screaming fans, you think, stay at Leeds.
Just the entitlement is wonderful. And I look forward to them. If they were to go down,
I mean, relegation would be magnificent, isn't
that'd
it?
That'd be the best thing possible though for them.
Do you know what?
I'm just so grateful for this last 16 years, to be honest.
They'd enjoy it, wouldn't they? They'd go down, come back up and enjoy it.
Get a bit of perspective and everything's fine, isn't it? Whenever I hear Arsenal fans, I just think, am I that into football, really? It's different levels, isn't it?
Imagine him going downstairs after recording that and his mum's got his tea ready. It must be just a certain awkward conversation, and you've been shouting at your phone again. Are you all right? And it's like, yeah, I'm fine. It's just doing it for the internet. It's not a problem.
Right, well, doing it for the internet, Steve Nicol, a firm favourite on this show last year when we introduced him to you. If you're not familiar with who Steve Nicol is, he's the former Liverpool defender from like the 80s and whatever. He does ESPN in America's Premier League coverage. And last season, I think it's fair to say he served up some real gems, because he's very morose on the one hand, almost sounds like he hates every moment of being alive, completely unimpressed by it was the Man City home game, which was just so swashbuckling and exciting.
No control.
Yeah, there was no control.
Leeds had no control.
Hated it. But he's a complete contradiction of a man, because
he's out of control.
Yeah, every now and then he'll start to behave like a giddy teenager. But this weekend, he slid into like primary school level stuff. So I will spoil the surprise and explain what happens because you'll probably enjoy the clip more. But essentially, he farts when they're live on air.
And it's just a bit, he was on Zoom last season. He's in the studio now with, who's he with? It's
I think it's Kay is the host. She's she is the anchor rather.
Yeah, and there's another ex footballer with them as well. I can't remember who they are.
It doesn't matter. They could be anybody. Could be absolutely anybody. Because
he doesn't mind who his victims are.
Doesn't give a shit. So he drops a guff when they're live on air, and he's not embarrassed by it in the slightest. He just owns it, and then is almost going, oh, whatever. Just completely styles it out. So what they're doing is they're doing a bit here. They're talking about the summer's transfer sagas just before they go across to a reporter. So this is the bit that you're listening out for. What I've done is here, I've isolated the sound of the fart because it's barely perceptible on the recording, but it's a hum followed by a pop, and I've turned the volume up on this just so you know what you're listening to. This is it. Okay?
It's Kay Murray is the host, and Alejandro Moreno is trying to talk about some transfers.
There we go. So I'll give you the little fart noise. So just ignore the drum beats either side of it. It's just a little whistle and pop in the middle. So it's like a meep, boom. Right, and it happens about 4 or 5 seconds into this clip when they're talking. There's a short pause, just a natural pause in the conversation, and you say you can barely hear it, but you definitely know when it's happened because Steve Nichol does not give a shit.
Kane ones, whereas Mbappe, we're gonna keep talking about it up until last year. So you okay, Kane?
Sounds like you had something to say.
Yeah.
What would you like to say, Stephen?
He was saying plenty while I was talking.
I'm not going to say because somebody would say whatever I said stunk. So I'm not going to do that.
You said plenty already.
All right. So, Jules. Which transfer saga has annoyed you more this summer, Kane or Mbappe?
And there's poor Jules sat in a room somewhere else, not knowing what the hell to do off the back of that.
You're right to describe him as a contradiction because I now understand that's the attitude of a man who sets fire to Gary Ablett's wife's hair, as has been discussed previously on this podcast.
Which he did.
I now understand how that can happen because none of it's his problem. You know, he described her, didn't he, of her going, lighting her up, just getting a lighter, being really tempted by, because it's the mid-80s and she had all the spray in hair, just flicking the lighter and going whoosh. And then I'm imagining him sitting back and somebody saying, well, what's going on? Why is her hair on fire? I'm saying, well, I'm not a firefighter. What's it got to do with me? He's like, well, you set her hair on fire. Not doing me. It's exactly the same attitude here. Just sits there. It's like, well, yeah, I just did that.
Farting on live TV, it's the most natural thing a man can do.
You just have to, everybody else just has to deal with it. And it's like this pattern of behavior is so strange. The setting wife's hair on fire, farting on ESPN. It feels like he wants to live life on the edge. It's all very risky, the things that he's doing. But then when he watches Leeds United play, oh, there's no control. They're taking too many risks. Is it like he is the only person who can take these risks? If he was playing that way, then it would be fine. That he'd be pushing it even further. He'd be setting his boots on fire or something as he takes to the pitch just to add to a little bit of danger, or what is he alive for? What's he getting out of this?
Lives for kicks.
But he doesn't like watching other people get their kicks.
Because he's jealous. He wants to Steve Danger Nichol. That's what it's all about for him.
He's a danger to the people around him if this is the way he's carrying on. It's one thing. He's just not really, he's not got out of Zoom mode, has he? Still thinks he's singing at home, just talking to a camera and nobody can hear anything that's going on.
Just squeeze one out.
His window pops up.
It's a wonder he turned up to the studio with trousers on.
He might not have done. He was under a desk. He was sat around a desk. So let's not take anything for granted. And we'll return with more propaganda after the Burnley game. Do you remember the Burnley guy that we looked at last season? He was the one with the teardrop tattoos just under his eye.
Michael's good friend.
Yeah, a terrifying looking man. So we'll return with his thoughts after we beat Burnley at the weekend, and check out the feed for the main show. And do have a look at this on YouTube as well. We've got the new YouTube channel now where you will find the podcast. So you can watch propaganda as well as listen to it. Sorry, Moscow's distracting me by making love to the camera again, which sadly is becoming a feature of this. I think we should get Ding onto you again. Right, we'll catch you next time.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.